All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton coming at you on this beautiful opening week of May. I mean, it's the opening full week of May, at least. And we got Bucks news, just like we always seem to have a little bit here and there, that we're going to talk about today with Coach Dungy being the next Ring of Honor honoree. We got a Lightning playoff series getting started. We had the Kentucky Derby this past weekend. Lots of things going on. Obviously, we're going to focus on the Bucks, but we're into that time of year now where potpourri on the show. We'll be touching on a few different things. So first things first, always love having getting emails from you guys. Always appreciate them. Always take time to respond to them when I get the chance to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. That's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. Twitter at BobbyGameDay. All your thoughts are appreciated. Positive, negative, cushion, discussion, all that stuff. So let's talk about Tony Dungy being honored in the Ring of Honor real quick, because I love any excuse I can find to look back on Buccaneer history, because it's the history of my own life. That's the way I'm the whole thing with sports to me, with memories, is nostalgia. When we talk about the Bucks in the late 90s, early 2000s, I like it because, one, I love those Bucks teams, but two, I'm going back to myself in the late 90s and early 2000s, and I think we all feel that way a little bit whenever we get a chance to talk about the past. So that's what I'm going to do today here for a few minutes, because here's the thing about Tony Dungy. It's kind of weird how polarizing he can be, and even looking on the website on Joe Bucks Fan when the story came out and the article up, reading the comments, you get so many people, all right, Tony Dungy, the all-time greatest, my favorite. You know, people who are a little turned off by Gruden despite the whole Super Bowl thing. Love Dungy, he'll always be their favorite. There's that group, and there's the other one. Oh my God, this guy, I can't believe you're honoring a guy who could barely coach one-third of the team. Offense, defense, special teams, and defense was all Tony Dungy was good for, and oh my God, he was under 500 in the playoffs, and blah, 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 blah. You know, there's that group too. So let's take a step back and kind of take an all-encompassing look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a franchise. Because whatever you think of Tony Dungy, and by all accounts, he's a good guy. I personally, and I like Tony Dungy, I personally got a little tired in recent years just of the idea that Tony Dungy was like the unspoken authority on everything, and it was like, oh, well, let's get Tony Dungy to weigh in on this, and Michael Vick was coming out of his whole thing, and oh, Tony Dungy's going to counsel him, and you know what is? And it wasn't Tony Dungy's fault. I just kind of got annoyed by the way the media sort of had this deferential, and again, this is from somebody who likes Tony Dungy, and I've never met him personally, but however you personally feel, maybe you agree with me, or maybe you love him, maybe you think he's the greatest person ever. I've got his book, Uncommon, which my mom got me for a Christmas gift several years back. I don't remember exactly which year. And there's a lot of good life lessons in that book, and a lot of things you can learn from a guy like him. I mean, Tony Dungy's an amazing character, an amazing person. I don't think that can be argued. But again, none of that's the point anyway. I'm just talking about football right now, okay? Step back for a second and look at the Bucks. From 1976 until right now, okay? And I don't know about you, but I kind of look at Buccaneer years historically as AD and BD, after Dungy and before Dungy. Because of all the things you want to say about Dungy and how amazing his defenses were, or how crappy his offenses were, or if you think he was worth his own weight in gold, or if you don't think he was worth his own salt, whatever it is, the Buccaneers were one way before him, and they are another way today after him. And that's the bottom line. And you can't argue that. And there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast. Well, okay, assuming there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast to begin with, a lot of that group is maybe some people who have been Buck fans in more recent times. Maybe you moved to the city or the area more recently, or maybe you were just, you know, not on the bandwagon until after the Super Bowl or whatever it was. There might be a lot of you who in the last 10 years have become Bucks fans, or in the last 5 years have become Buck fans, or since they drafted Jameis Winston have become Bucks fans. There might be a lot of that. That's fine. There's nothing. I'm not nothing wrong with that. But there's others like me, and who I'm sure there's a lot of you like me, the old guard, I like to say, who know this franchise's history and live this franchise's history as fans, going all the way back to the late 70s, early 80s, through the 80s and 90s. And I'll bet you if you took a poll of the people, again, who are more recent fans and the people who are historical fans, I'll bet you could pick out the ones who are historical fans and what they think of Tony Dungy. Because for me, personally, I was born in 1980, okay? As I've said on this show before, my mother trudged up the stairs of the Sombrero in the pouring rain with me in utero in her womb in 1979 in a downpour. I mean, the most torrential rain a Bucks game has ever seen when Neil O'Donoghue made that field goal and clinched the Bucks' first ever playoff berth. And she got up those steps again a few weeks later when they played Philadelphia in their first ever playoff game, which they won. And she did it again the next week, again, with me in utero, little tiny blastocyst Bobby Fenton, in late 1979. I was born in June 1980. And she did it for the NFC Championship game, which the Bucks lost 9-0 to the Rams. And her and my grandmother were at the airport, all right, when they came back from big wins in that 1979 season in cold temperature. And they did all that stuff. It was when the fans stormed the field in 1976 when the Bucks won their first ever home game, a week after they'd won their first ever game. She was there. My dad was there. This is real greaseball, old school stuff, like they say in Goodfellas. This goes back to the old country for me. It's very personal. And I mean that in a good way. I'm not just some Johnny come lately. Oh, yeah, I like football. I like the Bucks. Let's see what that. No, this is like in my blood. I mean, literally, it's like in my family's blood. So I come along, and by the time I'm mature enough and old enough to even understand what I'm watching, it's probably, what, 1985, 1986, when I was 5 or 6. I mean, I went to games before then, and I went to Bandits games, too, with Steve Spurrier and John Reeves and all that crew. Did all that when I was younger, but, you know, first grade or so is when you really start to get an idea of, hey, I'm watching the, you know, before that, you're kind of just along for the ride. So, from those mid-80s years, all the way to 1997... Okay? The Buccaneers lost 10 games or more every single one of those seasons except for one. All right? The playoffs were never even, I mean, I didn't even know what a playoff game, I would watch them on TV at the end of the year, but like, I never looked at the standings or even understood what any of that meant. My mind was warped because the Bucs were never even anywhere near contention. It wasn't anything we even talked about, like at school. And again, that's another thing. Little kids today in Tampa, you know, and I know the Bucks aren't great now, but that's what I'm getting at. They might, hey, did you see the Bucks game? Yeah, we talked. You know, none of my friends were Bucks fans because they weren't good, and I was different. I've always been really proud of this because even as a kid, I understood loyalty, and I wasn't a bandwagon fan, and I'm very proud of that. I don't care if anybody thinks that's dorky or not. All right? But there was always other kids, oh, I'm a 49ers fan, or I'm a Cowboys fan, or this, that, and the other. I thought those kids had no soul. Even when I was 10 years old, I thought those kids had no soul. The Bucks, though, the constant in my life. Really one of the only things to this day that's the same now as it was when I was a kid is me and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, that's what's so cool about it. So my point is, never had anything to get excited about except just for the sake of Buccaneer football itself. And we went through all the code, you know, we had Ray Perkins, I remember, Lehman Bennett, Richard Williamson, Sam Weish. I remember all of it. Even as a kid, I remember every last bit of it. I got a good memory. And I got a little excited for Sam Weish, the whole New Day in Tampa Bay thing, 5-2, we all remember that. But then Tony Dungy came along. And something was happening. And it wasn't plainly evident yet, but that 1996 season, all right, that was the one. The Bucs started out, and Tony Dungy, they started out, I think, 0-5 or 0-6. They got their first ever win under Dungy against Minnesota at the Sombrero to get to 1-6 on the year. And I remember being there. I was at every game back then, every single one. And then I remember them going on the road to San Diego, getting a big win out there in a place they hadn't won on the West Coast much ever, and they won that, and they finished winning like four out of their last five or something like that, and finished respectably. And, you know, it sounds cheesy now. If they did something like this now, I'd probably just scoff because I'm so jaded. Like, oh, whatever. They're 7-9, 6-10. But back then, it was like, hey, you know what? I think this could kind of springboard them into next year. Like, we were so just hopeful. You know, that was just all we ever were. And then 1997 came along. Now, 1997, and I won't go, you know, do a whole oral history of the 90s here, but follow me on this for a second. 1997. To this very day, and I don't think it'll ever be surpassed, even the Super Bowl, 1997 is the most fun I ever had as a sports fan, all right? I was a senior in high school, I was 17 years old, and it was the first time the Buccaneers, after all my whole life of just never even knowing what success for the Bucs felt like, the first time they made a playoff run, the first time they had a winning record, I mean, it was like walking on air. They started out 5-0. I remember the win over the Dolphins on Sunday Night Football. I remember the opening day win over the 49ers when Steve Young and Jerry Rice and the big bad 49ers came in here. And it was always, oh, yeah, little old Tampa Bay, whatever. And the 49ers. And we kicked their ass that day. That was the day Sapp, it was pretty much a dirty hit, but he brained Steve Young. And at the time, before all the concussion stuff, we thought it was great. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. You don't come in here anymore. Tampa's not a pushover anymore, baby. I remember it all. I'm looking at it right now with my own two eyes as I sit in my garage and record this show. I'm looking at the We Believe sign they handed out that day, that opening day, week one against the Niners in Tampa. And then, of course, the playoff run, you know, beating the Lions in the final game ever at the Sombrero. Of course, losing to the Packers the next week. And then all through the late 90s and early 2000s, then the near misses, losing in the playoff first round. You know, well, 99, of course, the NFC Championship, not the first round, but that just painful loss to the Rams when all the Bucs had to do was score one touchdown at some point and they would have beaten the greatest show on turf. Couldn't do it. Bert Emanuel, Donovan McNabb losing to the Eagles 2 years in a row up in Philly. I mean, on and on and on. Okay, so my point is, though, listen, to this day, my mentality as a Bucs fan is different than it ever was before that 1997 season because of Tony Dungy and what he did. Not solely Tony Dungy, but what he did for this club. He changed the thinking. Because I admit, I mean, you know, I was only a kid, but you know, I didn't play for the team. I didn't believe that the Bucs were one of those teams. I didn't believe that I was one of those fans. I didn't believe that we were those people, that our team could be good. I just didn't believe that. I think a lot of us just got so used to them sucking year after year after year that we just, you know, I didn't even think about it like any other way. It's just, you know, the playoffs were just kind of a fleeting thing. They were like a cloud. Like, you see a cloud, but then you reach out and try and touch it. And it's not actually a substantial thing. It's just a thing you see from a distance. Other people get to do that stuff. Other teams get to have fun, exciting Monday night football games. Other teams get to play playoff game. And then, like I said, 97 came along. And even though now we're in a stretch here where the Bucs have missed the playoffs, again, it's been over a decade. But those of you that have been around since the 80s or 90s and now, you know it's not the same. This latest stretch, this latest slump, doesn't feel anything like it did in those days where it was nearly two decades of complete and utter and total futility, where it never, ever, ever felt like the Bucs could really actually be good. Okay? So, I will always, always, always remember Tony Dungy fondly, if for no other reason than that, because he's the one person in this whole organization's history who kind of serves as a benchmark between two eras of Buccaneer football. And again, I know they were good in 79, obviously. We talk about that plenty. And I know they've been bad post-Super Bowl, also plenty. But there's still a pretty clear delineation, a pretty clear line you can draw from the hiring of Tony Dungy and what this club was like before and what it's been like since. And I can't think of a more profound impact somebody can have on a team. And I know he didn't win the Super Bowl. And that leads me to my next thing, because I heard this article drug up again. It's going to get drug up now several times between now and when Dungy's brought in and inducted into the Ring of Honor when they do it for the Steelers game. But, oh, God, he could never win the Super Bowl. But you know what? He got hosed, and then John Gruden came in and won it with his players. That's Dungy's Super Bowl. All right. I just canonized Dungy pretty much a few minutes ago. But let's be fair. That's absolute horse bleep. If you anybody who says Gruden won with Dungy's players, I have to hold back. And I'm not going to call anybody names or anything, but that's a really, really, really bad take. And it's been a bad take for going on 16 years now since the Bucs actually won the Super Bowl. Because, one, this isn't college football. There are no Dungy's players. Yeah, Dungy was there when they drafted some guys and had input on that. Absolutely. But it's professional sports. Players come and go all the time. Some of those guys were there before Dungy got there, too. All right? Some of those guys who had a real big role were there before Dungy got there, too. Were they Sam Weish's players? But even if I grant you the premise, number two now, let's grant your premise. Yeah, they were Dungy's players. Okay, fine. Let's treat it like it's college football and that he recruited these guys and personally brought them all in and built the team himself from scratch. If you want to concede that, he still didn't win with them, and John Gruden did. So what does that say? I remember when Tony Dungy got fired, and I felt bad for him, but I was for it. Because I was so frustrated by, and again, anybody who lived through this, you already know all this, and you're nodding your head. But the offense was so bad, and not just so bad, but so hopelessly far away from actually being good, that, and you know, he was a loyal guy. He wouldn't lose Mike Shula. He stuck with him way longer than any of us wanted him to as the offensive coordinator, but he eventually did fire Mike Shula. And I remember the surge of excitement when he did. I was like, we're going to finally win. Like, we're going to do this now. He fired Mike Shula. Oh, my God. And they brought in, I think it was Les Steckel, if I remember correctly. And, you know, it was a little bit better, I guess, but not really. And then finally it was too much, and it caught up to Dungy, and he was let go. And I was for that. And that was before we even knew what was going to happen and what we had in front of us with Gruden. But even having been for that, I never, ever, ever, then or now, would have taken away what Dungy meant to the Bucks. But it has to be said, if you really believe it was Dungy's players that Gruden won with, that still doesn't change the fact that Dungy didn't win the Super Bowl with him, or a playoff game with him after 99, and that Gruden did. And again, say what you want about Gruden, too. We have on this show. But I wouldn't trade. And if you were here for it, I don't think any of you would. You'd be crazy. But I wouldn't trade the sequence of events that took place from 1997 through 2002 for anything. It was the perfect, perfect build. Arcs and then peaks and valleys up and down. And then it crescendoed with a Super Bowl win in 2002. It was perfect. I wouldn't trade any of it. And what's happened since then obviously is not good. But again, that all started with Tony Dungy. Undeniable. People who try and deny that have no credibility with me. People who try and deny Gruden's impact, though, also have no credibility with me. But the delineator, the marker, the difference between one way that the franchise was the other, that's Tony Dungy. And that's always how I'm going to feel. And I saw some people saying on, like, Joe Bucks fan on the comments, you know, like, hey, it's pretty odd that this franchise has been unsuccessful for most of its existence, and yet we have three head coaches now in the Ring of Honor. And maybe if I just told you those facts and nothing else, you'd say, yeah, it's weird. But if you actually look at them, makes total sense. I mean, McKay's a no-brainer. Gruden won the only Super Bowl in franchise history, so I think that's a no-brainer too. But Dungy, I think, is also a no-brainer. I have no issue with it. I'm happy for him. I'm looking forward to the ceremony. It's going to be fun, and I'm glad to see that he'll be in there. Now, there's other guys that also, you know, Rondy is so young. I think that that's what's hurt him, because I think the Bucks keep thinking, oh, well, Rondy, we'll put him in soon. You know, Rondy's like, what, 40-something, early 40s? It's not like, oh, we got to get Rondy in, you know. He'll always, but still, Rondy needs to be the next guy in. And there's others. You know, James Wilder's one you can make a case for, although he played for terrible Bucks teams. So did Gruber, and they got him up there. But Wilder, if you're, again, an old-school Bucks fan, you remember him being basically the only thing the Bucks could lean on back in those seasons in the 80s. But, I mean, Ronnie's the obvious one. I think he should be the next one. I think he will be the next one. But we're getting, I think we're getting all the obvious ones out of the way. I think Dungy's an obvious one. I think Ronnie's an obvious one. Then after that, we can start having debates. Obviously, Lynch already there. Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, McKay, you know, the Jimmy Giles, Leroy Selman. On. We're getting the ones that are just no-brainers out of the way. And, you know, a couple more to go, I think. And then we're fine. But, again, man, think about the franchise as a whole, if you've been around long enough to do that. And think about what it was like before Tony Dungy was hired as this team's head coach and afterward. And I remember, like, the whole coaching search thing. And, it was like, I think Mike Heimerdinger was one. Was Lindy and Fonny one of them, the candidates, too? If I remember, the Joes might remember better than me on that one. There was a few of them, though. And Dungy wasn't a guy, you know, he came from Minnesota. He was the defensive coordinator. And was like, yeah, okay, I mean, this guy's got some good defenses. Let's try this. You know? And what he did and what happened with this team after that, man, those memories are still real fresh. I keep that We Believe sign in my garage for a reason. Is I always feel good when I look at it. It takes me back to when I was a senior in high school, the big sombrero. I mean, just stuff that you can't ever get back, you know? Stuff that's only in our memories now. Those are some really good times, and Tony Dungy was responsible for a lot of them because he turned this into a franchise. I remember looking up and seeing a blimp flying over the stadium in 1997, and I know it seems stupid now, but I was like, oh, we got a blimp! Like, that was the coolest thing ever. Like, we were a national deal, you know? And I was like, whoa, Madden and Summerall coming here. Madden and Summerall never came here. They came here for games, being on Sunday night, being on Monday night. I mean, all the cool stuff that, again, now is still cool, but we just assume. You know, even now in the Bucks, again, having missed the playoffs every year for 10 years now, the idea of them making the playoffs isn't like, oh my God, we just assume they should be making it, and they're not. Like, that wasn't the mentality back then. That was not the mentality back then. It was complete hopelessness. Like, people with bags on their heads, you know, people just a laughingstock, really. And never again. Never again. Because of Tony Dungy. That was when it shifted. So anyway, email me if you want. If you agree or disagree, that's fine. I think it's hard to argue with the idea of him being in the Ring of Honor. Although, again, if you read the comments on Joe Buck's fan, and hey, don't ever go away, comments. I love the comments. I can't get enough of them. And you can comment on mine when he puts my link up. I don't care. Say whatever you want. People say internet comments are a wasteland. Internet comments are half the reason I read a lot of things on the internet. You know, I can take it. It's fun to me. But anyway, email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com or on Twitter. At Bobby Game Day. So that's where we're at with football right now. You know, post-draft, now it's going to be about, you know, the owners' meetings coming up and mini camps and things like that. And, you know, pretty much just dead time all the way until training camp, which is not far away. We're approaching the 2-month mark, which is nothing when you think about it. In the meantime, though, if the Lightning can keep this up, what they're doing, they can make this a real short-feeling offseason for the Bucks. See, the teams help each other. Lightning go deep. By the time they're done, hell, we're 6 weeks away from football season, if they can get as deep as we hope they can. And they just released the schedule for the Eastern Conference Final with the Capitals. And the biggest change there, it's going to be every other day starting Friday, just like what, you know, I like it that way. I don't like when they have 2 days off in between games. It should be game, day off, just every other day. And you know that's what's coming, and that's what they have here with the East Finals. But the big change is, you know, there's only 2 series going on now, so they alternate days. There's only 1 game per night. No more doubleheaders, no more flipping around, no more hockey on CNBC or the Golf Channel or USA. You know, it's going to be NBC Sports Network or NBC itself, and that means prime time starts, and now we're starting at 8 o'clock instead of 7 or 7:30, which is the biggest change. In fact, all of the games in the Lightning Capitals series start at 8 o'clock, except for Game 2, which is on Mother's Day, on Sunday, starts at 7:15. Or actually, no, that starts at 8. Game 5, game 5 next weekend is the one that starts at 7:15, if I'm not mistaken. And the rest all start at 8. And I'm fine with it, by the way. I know a lot of people complain about late starts in sports. And I get it. But the thing about hockey, first of all, I mean, barring overtime, is you're pretty set. Like, baseball, hey, this game was 2:48. Well, this game was 3:48. And guess what? They were both 9-inning. You know, you don't, there's so much variance. Hockey's going to be 2:30, you know, maybe 2:20, maybe 2:40, and somewhere in there, though. It's going to be, you know, 2.5 hours. And if it goes any longer than that, it's usually because there was overtime. A really slow game with lots of different face-offs and whistles may stretch toward 3 hours, but they're not going to exceed 3 hours in regulation. So even an 8 o'clock game will be over, you know, they don't start right at 8. They start at 8:20, 8:15. That's still going to be over by 11:30. So for me, and a guy like me, I got kids 6 years old and 3 years old, and I don't know if any of you have kids that age, and if you do, and you have a smooth bedtime routine, I really, not even kidding, would like you to email me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com, because bedtime for me, like, literally makes me hate myself and takes me to dark places mentally every single night. The whole process, and I'm not complaining about being a parent right now. I love being a parent. I mean, I am complaining about being a parent, but I'm still saying I love it. The whole process from dinner time through bath time through bedtime, basically from 5 p.m. on, it just horrible, all right? And I got the two kids, got to bathe them, got to get their teeth brushed, got to get pajamas on, not in a big deal in any other way, it's just all routine stuff, but then got to read to them individually, all right? We tried, oh, we're going to do one reading time for everybody. That doesn't fly. Got to go read one in one's room, then go to the other one's room, and then we got to lay with them for a few minutes. Let's lay, try and help them get to sleep. I know you're all thinking, hey, screw you, Bobby, you know, stop being a puss and lay the law down and tell them this is how it is. Those of you that have strong-willed children understand how silly that is, but a lot of parents probably, or especially a lot of people without kids are probably thinking, yeah, this guy's letting his kids walk all over him, not in my house, ha ha. Yeah, you probably either have compliant children or no children, but those with non-compliant children understand that's pretty silly. But go, by all means, yeah, go tell your kid this is how it's going to be and then just walk out of the room. See how it goes. My point is, with these 7 o'clock games, 7:15 games, what have you, 7:30, by the time I'm done with all this BS every night, it's usually the middle of the second period, if I'm lucky, if it's not the second intermission already. And I don't know, I mean, I can't tell you how many times these playoffs already, I've curled up in the dark with my back to a sleeping child and my phone on the dimmest possible light setting and watched the Lightning play on the NBC Sports app on my phone, just making sure the kid's asleep so I can get the hell out of the room without tripping the wire and touching off another 30 minutes of whatever other BS I have to deal. That's how I've been watching the playoffs for the first period and a half. Only then can I get downstairs and get in front of my big TV and enjoy it the way it's supposed to be enjoyed. 8 o'clock starts, though. And really, it's like 8:20. Now I got a chance to get down there and miss maybe a few minutes of the first period. You get me down there with 15 minutes to go in the first period, that's fine. I'll miss those first 5 minutes or so. So they can't start late enough for me. I know some people complain about it, but I have no issue with it. What's say? Start them at 9 if you want to. Hell, I don't care. Because the sooner I can clear bedtime, the more time I have to watch the game, and that time comes after 8 p.m. most nights. Anyway, thanks to everybody. As always, it was a lot of fun. We'll be back next week with plenty more on the free stretch, but I wanted to do a little bit on Tony Dungy this week because, again, all the different opinions I've been reading and hearing and all the different angles you can approach with someone like Tony Dungy and his impact on the franchise, again, there was basically before Dungy and after Dungy, and things were different. Things are still different to this day because of that first season in 1996 and then 1997 and all that happened there. I think that's undeniable, and it was a really fun ride way back then, even though it ultimately ended in frustration for Tony Dungy. It was a year later they won the Super Bowl after him. It's still some of my best, if not the best memories I have as a sports fan, and certainly as a Bucks fan, were directly tied into those years. So I look forward to the season. I look forward to his honoring during that Monday night game in week, I think 4 it is. But until then, Enjoy the Eastern Conference Final if you're a hockey fan. If you're not a hockey fan, this is a good time to go ahead and jump on board. Nobody's going to say anything about it. Just trust me. Watch the games because it's exciting as all hell. And in the meantime, take care of yourselves. Be safe. I'll be back next week. Thanks to the Joes for hosting this show on their esteemed website. The best place by far to go for Buccaneers coverage anywhere on the internet, joebucksfan.com. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's the Free Stretch wherever you are. And however you're listening, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and go Bucks.